Thank you very much. Now we will go on to item six. This is a presentation from staff on the information regarding the governor's mandate for districts on the state monitoring list to open with distance learning. And San Diego County is on that list, and we're going to have a briefing now at this point in, from staff. And then after that, we have public comments, and we'll take those after that. All right, Julie.
Yes. Good evening, board. We'll just wait for the presentation to come onto the screen. And while that's coming on, I will echo the board in thanking people for the emails that they have sent. We've received emails from the community. We've received emails from staff. Appreciated. We have gotten clear guidance as of Friday, July 17th. And we continue to get updated guidance, and it's a very stressful time for everyone, right? We're all in the same boat, and literally the entire world is in this situation together. And we're doing the best possible deconstruction of the various documents, the new health orders that we get, the industry guidance. And all of these documents, by the way, are on our website. All of the updated versions as issued by the state of California and San Diego County are on our website. So everywhere where we've obtained information, we've provided those documents for community members and staff on our website. So tonight, what we're really going to review for the community, for the board, is how we're going to reopen schools and to answer some of those really big questions that people are wondering about. With that, I just want to say that while I know that this is a very challenging time for everyone, I've appreciated people's patience, the detail and care with which people have constructed their emails has just been overwhelming in a good way, overwhelming in a way of people expressing how they care about students, how they care about their own children, and how they care about this district. So we thank you very much for that. So we'll go on to the next slide. And these are our topics for our presentation this evening. You may recall, Board of Education, that President Blessing did ask us to provide you with some information about what it would take to return for our K-5 students to return 100% back to the schools with social distancing. And it was quite a complex question, not as easy as it might seem. And we did put a team together, and it took them a couple of weeks to come up with that information. And we're just going to share that feedback with you tonight. Based on the orders given by the governor Friday, July 17th, that's not an option, but we still wanted to report back to the board the work that we did, because we did put quite a bit of effort into coming up with that information. We will also provide you information on the governor's update and what that really means and how that will impact our schools, what our instructional program will look like when school begins in August, our work around instructional technology, update on CIF and athletics. I pause a little bit there. It just makes me so sad with that being delayed for all of our scholar athletes. Child care, we have some updates on how we're poised to provide child care to the extent possible. So we'll give some more details and information about that. General school operations and our communication plan. So with that, going on to the next slide, will be Vicki Grablin, and she will give a report out to the board on the information that was researched to have TK5 brought back with 100% in person with social distancing, which was, when we did this, our goal was to keep students 6 feet from one another. That was the guidance we were going by a couple of weeks ago when we were asked to do that, which is, as you may or may not know, no longer the guidance. Vicki Grablin, will you please share your research with the board?
Thank you, Dr. Vitale, and good evening, board members. Per your direction, a team came together from Human Resources, the Educational Support Services Building, and some site leaders. And we looked into the options to bring back students on campus 100% in grades K through 5 for the fall of 2020. Keeping in mind, as Dr. Vitale said, the health and safety guidelines that have been provided to us, we looked at an adult to student ratio of 12 to 1 in grades K through 3 and 15 to 1 in grades 4 through 5. The team explored the staffing, the physical space needed to accommodate the students on return, and all areas of the campus, both inside and out, were explored for those physical distancing of our students. Redeployment of the staff was considered to maximize our existing capacity in support of our proposal. Next slide, please. So this is a sample of a small group, a school, where we have redeployed existing staff and looked at the hiring needs in order to accommodate the social distancing and the staff-to-student ratios. This included both a 7-hour school day, and that would be at a cost of $465,807, and a 6-hour school day at a cost of $421,732. Again, this was a 400 student school. Next slide, please.
I'm sorry, real quick.
Sure.
Before you go on,
yes.
Just for clarity's sake, it lists other assignments at the top. Those are reassigned.
Those would be
individuals.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, redeployed employees are reassigned. Thank you for the clarity. So the next is a larger sample. This is a school that is 650 students. And at this point, we looked at a 7-hour day. And you can see the total there for the 7-hour day and as well for a 6-hour day. Okay. So again, redeploying staff and then looking at the additional staffing needed to maintain that student to adult ratio. Next slide, please. So here's the full overview of all schools. And what we also did is we took a look at not only bringing back students on a shortened day from 7 to 6 hours, we also looked what would be the cost if we adjusted the grade spans of who we brought back. And so that's what this particular chart depicts. All in all, the total to bring all of our scholars back on campus for that full 7-hour day, K through 5, was basically $11,916,689. This was to hire approximately 264 staff members who would need to come on board to maintain the ratio. Okay. Again, we looked at other options to see what the feasibility of those would be as well, and to bring you that feedback. The funding that would be going towards this and that amount was really just to hire the staff members, and the amount varies based on how many hours we were in and which grade spans we would be bringing back. Thank you, Dr. Vitale.
Again, just to clarify that, Dr. Vitale, that was to achieve, would be needed to achieve 6-foot distance between students in the K through 5 elementary, correct?
That's correct. Because okay. That was the guidance we had at the time we did the research.
Got it. Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Vicki Gravelin. We'll go on to the next slide. So I want to give you just a little snapshot of what the governor's date entailed on July 17th. So safe in-person instruction based on local health data. Basically what this is when the county is off the monitoring list for 14 consecutive days, in-person instruction could begin. And San Diego County is on the monitoring list, so we must begin with distance learning. So we are in preparation to begin with distance learning. Mask requirements, we did get more clarity on mask requirements. All staff must wear a mask. All students grades 3 and above must wear a mask. Students in grades 2 and below are strongly encouraged to wear face coverings. And we'll have more on masks and face coverings later, but the governor's update was very clear. physical distancing. Adults need to stay 6 feet from one another, and hopefully that is something that we're all practicing at this time. And they need to stay, adults need to stay 6 feet away from students. Students should maintain 6 feet of distance from one another as practicable. And that is a key word in this language because we've all been in classrooms and we know that a 6 foot distance between children is not possible unless you remove the majority of desks and leave it to somewhere around 10 or 12. That's what so many districts were struggling with, and that's why the hybrid model was created and the schedules of A and B to have 50% of the kids in a classroom at any one time. But with the new guidance, it's very clear, adults to stay 6 feet away from one another, 6 feet away from children, and students as practicable. Testing and tracing, the public health guidance recommends that staff in every California school be tested for COVID-19 periodically based on local disease trends and as testing capacity allows. We expect to receive more updated information on that, as I am not able to provide you details now on who would do that testing and tracing. And timeframes for that. We don't have any of that information at this time. And rigorous distance learning. The governor was very specific and stated that we are required to provide rigorous and grade appropriate instruction, devices and connectivity to ensure students have devices and connectivity, daily live interaction for every child with teachers and other students, class assignments that are challenging and equivalent to in-person instruction, and targeted supports and interventions for English learners and special education students. We'll talk a little bit more about that and about our learning plan, and to take us into those some of those nuances will be Dr. Richard Lawrence on the next slide.
Thank you. We are working hard to build and improve the manner in which virtual learning will be delivered to students in the fall. Distance learning in the spring reflected emergency learning and teaching in response to the pandemic situation. We operated from a place of holding students harmless for the abrupt pivot, which led us to institute credit, no credit grading, which in turn created voluntary learning experiences, leading us to focus on engagement and outreach. In the fall, what will be different is that we will engage in virtual learning where students will attend classes daily, led by a teacher who will lead each day with live interactive lessons and rigorous learning experiences that meet course content standards. Students with disabilities will receive enhanced related services in areas such as speech and language services through the use of Presence Learning, an online learning tool that supports the special licensure requirements for speech language pathologists to be able to provide online speech services. Mental health services will be provided to students online as well. Our English language learners will be provided with a supplementary support class option led by a teacher who will provide live interactive lessons, activities, and supports for students. This summer, we piloted these English language development online lessons for students, and due to the hard work of the teachers and staff, the results were impressive, and we look forward to bringing this support to our English language learners this fall. All students at the elementary level will be graded numerically, while students at the secondary level will receive letter grades. Students will follow a daily schedule where attendance will be taken daily, as our scholars' presence is essential to enriching the virtual learning experience shared with their peers. Now I turn it over to Mrs. Gravlin. Next slide.
During our time in distance learning during the spring and the summer, we did offer professional development opportunities, and we surrounded ourselves with learning regarding digital tools and content delivery. Drop-in learning opportunities, such as tech talks and content conversations, were provided so that staff had an opportunity to go into small group interactions with our team of TOSAs. For those who preferred a more personalized and individualized training format, they were able to do so through Aludo, where they accessed online learning modules. This again was in response to the emergency state that we were in and the need to provide training as quickly as possible. As we move forward, we're looking for more in-depth learning opportunities for our staff as we continue our in virtual learning into the fall. Topics will include in the fall, but not limited to, increasing student engagement in online learning, student assessment and progress monitoring, course pacing and design, and best practices in content delivery online. We'll also offer training on how to support students with diverse needs in a virtual world. Along with staff training, we will offer parent and guardian training, learning opportunities so families can assist their student in accessing digital curriculum, as well as providing our families with technical support. I'll turn this back over to Dr. Lawrence. I'm sorry, that's me still, I apologize. As Dr. Lawrence and Dr. Vitale mentioned, and I'm going to kind of summarize what they have stated, our virtual learning model will include, again, daily attendance of students, which will be monitored through ARES. Students will have live interaction with their teacher in a daily environment and also be an opportunity to collaborate with their peers. This will all be done within a virtual classroom. Students will receive grades and attendance will be taken daily. Student progress will be monitored and additional support will be provided as needed. Support for our English language learners and our students with disabilities will continue. Next slide. So here you have a sample schedule for a virtual learning environment for our elementary students. And I'll just briefly go through the color blocks on this. In the green color box, those are the synchronous learning opportunities. And this is where, as the governor has stated and Dr. Vitale mentioned, our scholars will have the opportunity for interaction with their classroom teacher. This will be that live interaction in the virtual environment. So that's the green block. In the lavender block, that's the asynchronous or independent practice time. So this is where students might be online doing lessons practice that has been assigned by their teacher or being provided some small group instruction that their teacher is leading. In the blue blocks, we have what we refer to as our office hours, and this is similar to what we had during the spring. This is an opportunity for parents, guardians, to access their teacher as well as providing specific supports for students who have specialized needs. This is an overview of what a tentative schedule could look like. Again, we are looking at all different types of flexible opportunities for the learning environment, but we do know that we need to have a strong schedule for our families to follow and for our teachers. I'm going to turn this over to Dr. Lawrence, who will look at the middle and high school schedules.
Thank you. At the middle school level, students and teachers will follow a 7-period day. Teachers would engage students daily through a structured learning experience that would simulate as much as possible the face-to-face learning experience they would have on campus. This would include attendance, warm-up activities, live teacher teaching, group or independent practices based on facilitated learning experiences, and a closing activity check for understanding. On Mondays, minimum days will still be observed to allow for professional learning for our staff. Students would end the day on those Mondays at 1:15. Next slide. At the high school level, students and teachers will follow a 6-period day. Here, the teachers would again engage students daily through a structured learning experience that would simulate as much as possible the face-to-face learning experience they are accustomed to on campus. This would include attendance, warm-up, live teacher interaction, group or independent practices based facilitated learning experiences, and closing experiences to check for understanding. On Wednesdays, minimum days will be observed to allow for professional learning at the high school level. Students would end the day at 1:50. We recognize that nothing can replace the experiences that a student would have through in-classroom learning experiences. We, however, believe that this structure is needed to provide students with a rigorous learning experience that gets us as close as possible to experience students would have at school. Next is Chief Technology Officer, Mr. Moon.
We have a couple of folks back for the instructional technology piece. First is a target of 100% internet connectivity for every student. And so in this, all households are going to be contacted between the dates of August 3rd and August 12th to check in with them to make sure that they do have internet connectivity or what their status is. Once that status is determined, households that are not currently connected will be provided options to get them connected. As far as student devices go, new Chromebooks are currently on order for all high school students, and those are on their way. Our currently owned Chromebooks are now being evaluated to ensure that they are acceptable for student learning. We are also currently planning on additional Chromebook acquisitions using CARES Act funding, and our target is to be as close to or at one-to-one as quickly as possible. Moving on now, Dr. Soto will talk about athletics.
Great, thank you, Mr. Moon. Yes, on Monday, July 20th, CIF announced that the athletic schedule for 2021 will be a modified late start fall season with fall and winter sports running concurrently beginning in December or January based upon the sport. Spring sports will also be in the springtime with a commencement of March. Return to play guidelines will still be in effect. And those return to play guidelines are what is currently being utilized by our athletes at this time. At this time, I would like to turn it over to Dr. Sparks.
Thank you, Dr. Soto. Our child care plan for K-5, we know, is an important one to our families as they consider their child care needs when schools are not open in person.
Dr. Sparks, I'm going to interrupt you for 1 minute because I understand this needs to be refreshed.
Okay. Great, thank you. Okay. The virtual learning model provides opportunities for students to engage in before and after school care as funding and guidance allows. Opportunities for on-site childcare will initially be prioritized for essential workers when we are allowed to provide that childcare. We will provide this service to all families to the fullest extent possible at various school sites. In order to assess the needs of our community, we have developed a survey that parents and guardians can complete to express their interest and their needs for childcare services. We are making these decisions based on current guidance that we have from the county and when health orders allow us to provide childcare. For more information on childcare plans and the survey for parent interest, you can find that information on our website as a news update. Now back to Dr. Soto.
Thank you, Mr. Sparks. On August 11th, we look forward to opening our campuses for our staff. We recognize that our teaching practitioners may want to utilize their classrooms for their virtual teaching. We are excited to bring our staff back, and we will have the required PPE available. School will begin on August 17th for our scholars, and that will be held remotely, virtually. Visitors will be welcomed, but only with a scheduled appointment. Signage, as indicated here on this slide, will be placed in front of school offices and district offices to indicate the importance of maintaining 6 feet apart and also about the requirements for the masks. As Dr. Vitale mentioned earlier, the governor was very clear about the importance of having a mask. All of our staff must wear face covering. And that face covering will be provided by the district. We have on order face shields and face masks for all of our staff. For students in grades 3 and above, if they are on campus, they must also wear a face covering. We as a district recognize that safety is a priority, and as such, we will have face coverings for our scholars as well. For students in grade 2 and below, it's encouraged to wear face coverings. Next slide, please. Daily symptoms checks will be available and occurring for all students and staff that are on campus. As mentioned earlier, PPE, the personal protective equipment, will be provided and furnished. It will be available at every school site and district office. That includes, as mentioned earlier, the cloth masks, the face shields, gloves for employees that are responsible for cleaning and for providing our meals. Next slide, please. We recognize that cleaning is a priority. The sanitization and disinfectant will be occurring on Wednesdays. Spray bottles with cleaning solutions, paper towels, and gloves will be placed in the classrooms for spot cleanings in between the custodial cleaning. Per the CDC guidelines, drinking fountains are closed. However, the water bottle filling stations that are available on various campuses will be open for those staff and scholars that have water bottles. Next slide, please. Hand sanitizer will be available. As noted here, there will be two types available. The large stand-up is available out on campuses. Those will be near the entrance of the cafeterias, near the restrooms. The smaller square size will be in the classrooms and in the front offices for available, to be used available, and it will be encouraged. At this time, I'd like to introduce Mr. Jennings to talk about communications.
Good evening, Board President Mike Blessing, members of the board, Dr. Vitale, and staff, and members of the public. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak tonight on something I'm very passionate about, which is communication. So the goal, as with any communications plan that we have, would be to provide staff, students, and families with consistent and targeted communication and information related to the planning and implementation of a district-wide plan, in this case, to safely reopen OUSD schools. Our objective is to keep stakeholders informed of the process, the planning and implementation of our reopening of schools, and to maintain communication that reflects current health guidance from local, county, and state and education professionals. We also aim to ensure that consistent communication outlines the procedures, plans, and information that all of our stakeholders will need to know, and ensure that public knows the safety of our students and staff continues to be our highest priority, which is the theme I think has been echoed throughout this evening's presentation. Communication will stress the importance of hand washing, good hygiene, and as long as guidelines require it, social distancing and face coverings. Next slide, please. Our communication channels. All stakeholders will receive targeted communication detailing what they need to know for a safe return to school. Our staff communication is targeted messaging to departments and staff throughout the district via email. And information for staff is also posted to our district websites, our school websites, and social media. As Dr. Vitale mentioned earlier, we do have a website dedicated to safely reopening OUSD, and members of the public and our staff are encouraged to visit that website. I'll give everybody a chance to grab a pen because I know you're riveted and need to write this down. It's www.osi.us/fall2020. To make it even easier, you just simply visit our homepage, and under quick links, you will see a quick link for safely reopening OUSD. Our parents, guardians, and caregivers can expect to receive communication to our district communication system Blackboard, and that's phone calls, emails, and text messages. As mentioned earlier, we will also be publishing all this information on our district website, our school websites, social media, and our safely reopening OUSD page. Next slide, please. So as we move forward right now, in July, we actually started our safely reopening OUSD website several weeks, I think it was, before it was actually a requirement, which is just, again, echoes the priority that my office, that district leadership, that this Board of Education places on communicating with members of the public. So we will make sure that that site is maintained and kept up to date. We surveyed employees on their plan for returns that we could make staffing accommodations. We made sure there was a notification for this board meeting sent out to not just staff, but all members of the public and posted publicly on social media and our websites. We shared this with media as well at large in San Diego. Going forward in August, we will make sure to continue to maintain our reopening website so that members of the public and staff know that that's a place that they can go and find current information, our guidance from the California Department of Health are there. There's actually quite a few documents there, as well as previous board meeting follow-ups and presentations. This presentation you're seeing this evening will be available tomorrow, as well as this communications plan we're currently covering. You can get information about childcare there as well. In August, we will also send a general update before the start of school to all of our stakeholders, and we will expect a update from our superintendent via video.
Thank you, Matthew, and thank you everyone for your contribution to reopening OUSD schools. And as Matthew stated, this presentation will be available on our website. The link for childcare is available on our website. And with that, we're happy to take any questions the board might have. And we are recommending to you the board approve our plans for the beginning of the 2020-21 school year. And happy to take any questions or if you want to allow public comment.
Eleanor, you got a question, a quick one? Or
I have a couple questions. On page 6, when we talk about the staff memory virtual learning schedule, what's the actual hours for elementary school? It's not listed.
Yeah, we don't have the actual hours, Ms. Pono, if you wanna speak to that. We just didn't specify that, but we will. It's different by school. We have late start and early start schools, and we just haven't worked out the details of the blocks, but we wanted to give people a general idea of what those would look like. But we will have that worked out by the time school starts on August.
The other thing was the watering stations. I know the city at one time had a grant that we could take advantage of for the watering stations being able to fill the water bottles. Have we been able to the money for those grants, or is go ahead.
Yes, I understand the question. Dr. Soto, you can add more specific information. All of the installation of the water filling stations for the grant that the city had with our schools has been completed. I believe it is all of our secondary schools and schools, none of our schools on the bases. We do have K-8s, but it's our secondary schools that were not on the base. Correct, Dr. Soto?
That's absolutely correct. They have been installed. The signage has been installed as well. Some secondaries, like the high schools, had multiple water filling stations just due to the size.
What, in that same line, I had the very similar question for Member Evans. What will we have to do? How much does it cost to do those kind of filling stations? It seems like that may be something we want to think about, especially with our kids off campus. Do we, if we could get more information about that at our next meeting.
We'll research what the cost of water filling stations, one at each elementary campus in K-8, is that what you're asking?
Yes.
We can look into that invitation. Maybe we can use CARES money for that. Is that what you're thinking, Board Member Joyce?
I'm just thinking it seems like an appropriate time to be thinking about that with the transmission and reducing all of our risk at some point, hoping to have our kids back on campus. So, yeah.
Got it. We'll research that. It won't likely take us, it'll take us more than a week, but we will research that.
Are we going to do public further, or should we do?
I would ask if we could do public comment first, and then we can go on with our board questions after that.
I got to take the mute off. So again, that sounds good. We'll take public comment now. I understand we have about a dozen speakers. Our moderator will call your name out when it's time to speak. We will give you 3 minutes, and that will show up on the screen. If you can streamline that down to under 3 minutes, that'd be appreciated, but we want to hear what you got to say. And if we can't answer all those questions tonight, certainly know that staff's taking that on board, and the board members are taking those questions on board, and we plan a robust communication back out to you in the coming weeks so that you know what's happening. Because it's a very dynamic situation that we're in, as you can understand, and everyone's anxious and everyone needs answers to stuff as best they can, and we'll try and provide that. So with that, I've got the first speaker, Greg.
The first speaker is Mark Nelson. Mr. Nelson, you can go ahead and ready.
Thank you. I'm having a problem. Can I show my, how do I show my picture? Can I put my picture on?
That's controlled on your end, sir.
Well, can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay, so I'll just go ahead without the video. I appreciate the opportunity to be heard. My name is Mark A. Nelson. I'm a concerned parent. I, together with my wife, we have three children in the Oceanside Unified School District, and we are fully 100% not happy with the district's decision to open up the school year with full distance learning, not providing any opportunity for on-campus learning. I understand the concern. I understand the governor, that you're under the Governor Newsom's guidelines, but I am an attorney by profession, and I specialize in research and evidence and analyzing the law as it applies to evidence. And the facts are that the CDC has stated that the hospitalization rates of children 0 to 17 are much lower, and they inserted the word much, which means more than to be expected, lower than the seasonal influenza rates from year to year for the same periods of time. So that population is not at risk. And as a fundamental right, the right to a public education is a fundamental right under the California Constitution and California Supreme Court law. And that must be provided at all costs, unless there is a less restrictive means to fulfill the compelling governmental interest of protecting the children from COVID-19. In this case, since the children are not at risk, there are ways to bring the kids back to school and safeguard the teachers and staff, the people that who are at risk, without the full distance learning. And I do not feel like the balance of the mental health aspects of the children, keeping them sequestered at home, is being fully appreciated by the board or by the governor or by any of those that are in authority. And therefore, I am proposing that the board, or that I, as a concerned parent, bring a lawsuit against the state of California, mandating that on-school, on-campus classes be provided for all students who wish to attend on school campus. And again, you can Google me, I'm Mark A. Nelson, and I'd be happy to represent any plaintiffs that are interested in joining that lawsuit.
Thank you very much. Next speaker.
Next speaker is Molly Diamond. Molly, if you'd press the raise hand function, please.
Molly Diamond.
Standing here available to help.
All right, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Good evening, board members. My name is Molly Diamond. I have two kids in Oceanside Unified. I'm incredibly disappointed with Governor Newsom's blanket ban on schools reopening. While I understand the purpose behind it, mandates like this are doing more harm than good for the special needs community. According to federal laws, FAPE and IDEA, our children in special education must be provided with a free and appropriate public education in the least restrictive environment. This new mandate does not provide for FAPE in the LRE. My child has over 1,000 special education service hours in her IEP, but she is only getting 2 30-minute Zoom sessions a week. There's no way that that's going to equal 1,000 hours in an entire year. there are many in our districts that are in our district that are getting no hours, not even one Zoom session because they don't speak or something like that. This is a direct violation of FAPE and IDEA. Not being in school has caused extreme behavioral regression in my daughter, emotional outbursts on a daily basis, if not hourly basis. Now, in your plan, you mentioned online speech therapy. I can 100% say that this has resulted in a thrown and broken computer in our case. If kids are not able to participate in online learning, then what do you plan on providing for them? If you don't have a plan for it, that's a violation of FAPE yet again. Our special needs community in OUSD needs a plan and not to have our kids' IEPs neglected like they are right now. I would also like to mention that if on-site childcare is being provided by the school district, then our kids absolutely should be in school. Thank you.
Thank you, Molly. Next speaker, Greg.
Jerron Andrews. Being promoted right now.
Great.
Mr. Andrews, you're...
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay,
go ahead.
Okay, thanks. Well, I'll preface this by saying that it's pretty pathetic that Oceanside Unified School District couldn't come up even with even earlier in the summer, a full reopening plan, because other neighboring districts and private schools, such as Carlsbad and the other private schools nearby, all did. The majority of the parents told you distance learning does not work. But you guys, even if this nuisance order is lifted, have no full reopening plan in place anyway. And so I have three points. One, it makes zero sense for all these teachers and staff to be making high 5- and 6-figure salaries off the backs of our kids. You are not educating them. A Chromebook and Wi-Fi is not an education. 100% distant learning means pink slips need to go out. We do not need this full gamut of principals, teachers, admin to be, if we're gonna be on this distant learning path. It's a lot of shuffling emails around all day and it's gotta stop. We don't need that. It does not help the kids learn. We are not going to sustain this type of compensation of high 5- and 6-figure salaries for this type of distant learning treatment. You gotta be kidding. And then the second point is, it's vouchers. If parents are doing the brunt of the work, as it was in the plan that you presented earlier, we need our money back. We need to purchase supplies, tutors, and other costly services. I think Molly Diamond, the previous speaker, mentioned that it's even more dramatic for special needs. So we need these services, such as Kumon and Mathnasium, who are open to work one-on-one in person with students. These services cost money, and I expect the district to supply the monetary credits back to the families. And the third point is we want our buildings and property back. Many in Oceanside live in small houses with little or no yard or apartments with no good yard or air condition. We want access to our tennis courts, our basketball, handball courts, science labs, classrooms, and other supplies in the buildings. We paid for that. Many parents will co-op in groups, and we want access to these rooms to work together. If it's assuming the teachers aren't going to be there, that's fine. The teachers don't need to be there, but we want our rooms back. The distant learning model starves children. Every day we drive past our dormant, locked off buildings. It's like driving by a big truck and food trucks, food for distribution, but we're not allowed to access the food inside the truck that our children need. We as a community need to part ways with what's going on that's causing these severe lockdowns. And I think I'm done, but those are the three points. It's vouchers, we want our buildings back, and we don't need all these high salary people for distant learning. You gotta be kidding me. Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Next speaker, Greg.
Next speaker will be Sarah Walker. Sarah, you should be set now.
All right, can you hear me now?
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you for letting us speak. I wanted to talk about my family's experience during crisis learning, other families' experiences, and some concerns that I'm going to miss learning, and a thought that could really help OUSD families. I appreciate all the information presented. It answered many questions, even though it doesn't really match what parents asked for. For my family, distance learning was fine at the elementary school level, but for my ninth grader and other secondary school students, few assignments were given. One teacher even told them that since we're credit, no credit, there really isn't any reason for them to assign anything. And this was inadequate. And my fear is that we're going to hit the other side of the spectrum where all of a sudden our kids are spending 6 hours in front of a computer trying to simulate what a classroom is like. I have a question whether, like, you know, how many hours are teachers, students, and peers going to be in this instruction? Because I can tell you right now, for most families, putting your kid in front of a computer for 6 hours a day isn't going to work. As a parent who's active in her school community and her children's education, I'm very hesitant to give my kids over for another year of distance learning, as the one thing that I learned from it was that I don't need OUSD to teach my kids. And I'm worried that many other key involved parents feel the same and will choose this year to exit public school. Molly brought up a lot of points that I know that my learning, distance learning experience was ideal, but I know that I don't represent the majority and that this was not their experience. And as an advocate for all kids, not just my own, we really need to think about how this is going to affect working parents, single parents, children with IEPs and disabilities. I'm glad that you brought up the connectivity issue, because those Chromebooks are pretty worthless without access to the internet. One thought that I had, as I have researched options at both private and charter schools for my own children, one solution I wanted you to perhaps consider was to allow families at OUSD, perhaps through Surfside, the ability to have access to funds similar to other charters in the area. For example, Inspire and Excel Academy grant vouchers of up to $2,700 per student for families to purchase what they need for their child to succeed. This could be used to purchase internet access or a math tutor for a parent that can't spend that much time with their child. Families could then receive what they know their child could benefit from and was missing from distance learning. I also am curious for my 10th grader, if we're able to break up into cohort groups with the same schedule, almost like a micro class. So at least they're with some of their friends and their peers, and are able to kind of simulate a peer interaction as they sit on Zoom. I just think that with the first day of school, just a few weeks away, parents need a clear plan of what it's going to look like so that we can plan. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the comments. Next speaker.
Next speaker will be Todd Madison. Madison, you can go ahead.
Hi, I'm Todd Madison. I'm a parent of Oceanside Unified Kids and now a candidate for school board this fall. This spring, we saw a survey of over 4,600 parents noting 53% of them wanted to see a return to a more traditional full-time schedule. That's 2,400 parents. We saw proposals on June 23rd, but no full-time return was even proposed. A group of parents, 629 of them, have signed a petition, not asking the district to plan for a TK through 5, not asking to ignore the governor's decree, but asking the district to put together a realistic plan for a full-time return for all. Now we see two or three pages of that, nothing like a complete plan and nothing like the detail we've seen in other districts or other schools in our area. I understand your projections are for a $12 million cost to do a full return to school. I would challenge that number because there's no detail on what types of staff are needed and their costs. I guarantee you there are ways to do that less expensively. For example, if your plan includes all additional certificated teachers, we could hire subs at $115 a day. If your plan includes more custodians, we could outsource more cheaply than full-time permanent employees. There are ways to do this if we actually want to. I guarantee your plan includes none of that, because the plan was obviously designed for shock and awe, not as a realistic look at what it would take to do what parents want. We also saw nothing in that regarding the COVID mitigation funds that are being provided. The Santee District, in their presentation, detailed that out. They said it covered their costs in doing that. How much is Oceanside getting, and where is that money going? Last December, we saw the district willing to spend millions giving itself raises, even though they were projecting a $7 million deficit already at that time. Why is the district willing to increase their deficit to pay themselves, but not to provide an education for our kids? What we saw was just a superficial effort designed to check a box, not a real examination based on giving parents what they want for their kids. For parents who want to join a grassroots effort, as Mark said, to press this issue, I'd suggest you go to openourschools.org and join the email list there. You care, make your voices heard. Many of us out here certainly care. I hope we'll see that reflected in the board elections this fall. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Next speaker is Jewel Michelle. Jewel, you're all set. Go ahead.
Hi. Good evening. My name is Shel Michael, President, Superintendent, members of the board. I'm addressing you today to advocate for the in-person classes for the on-base schools at Camp Pendleton. We all know our on-base schools differ greatly from those out in town. We're self-contained and almost isolated. This protects us. Our children are disproportionately isolated just due to the military nature, where we're constantly moving. We don't have the support of family to watch our children during the day. So therefore, the single active duty parents, the dual active duty parents, we won't be able to attend the virtual school day, and our children will bear the consequence of the reduced education time with the current attendance policies, and even saying that parents can face legal action for truancy. We all know that in-person interaction is vital for elementary, for proper social emotional development, and our kids are isolated. We need school. We need emotional, we need educational, we need the social experiences fulfilled from the teachers, from the staff, from our peers at school. A portion of students might be fortunate to attend the daycare centers. However, these providers are not credentialed teachers. They are not able to provide instruction, guidance, nor are they permitted to enforce mandatory time online. Please confirm the data, but communicable illnesses transmitted via airborne particles, such as TB, flu, measles, at the on-base schools are contracted and reported at much lower rates on base, partially due to our access to universal health care, partially due to community acceptance of healthcare officials' recommendations, and not to mention the potential for punitive actions against the parents if we disobey regulations and medical recommendations. We can anticipate that the COVID spread rate will mimic those other airborne illnesses, as evidenced by significantly lower amounts of confirmed cases on base compared to the county since the pandemic began. Governor Newsom's policy statement included one exception. This was a clause of the issuance of an in-person instruction waiver that can be granted by local health officials. These waivers need to be requested by the district superintendent in consultation with the labor unions, parents, and community organizations. I urge this board to conduct a proper risk-benefit analysis prior to the start of the school year. Superintendent, you need to request this waiver. I believe this waiver is justifiable for our unique population who so greatly needs the in-person instruction. By enforcing the governor's order without due diligence for those of us on base is basically asking us to accept that our children will be denied sufficient education this upcoming year. So please do your research, grant the waiver prior to the start of 2021 for the schools on board Camp Pendleton. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Next speaker, Greg.
Next speaker is Alicia Kopp.
Alicia, are you there?
She's being promoted right now. Alicia, you're set, go ahead. Alicia, you need to unmute so you can address the board.
Can you guys hear me? Hello?
Yes, they can hear you. Go ahead.
My name is Alicia Kopp, and I would also like to speak on not being in support of the virtual learning, and also in regards to being a military family as well. I am actually en route to move on to Camp Pendleton within the next week, and I was hoping that because other military bases have given parents the option of either sending their child for in-person learning or continue with virtual learning, that the schools on base at Camp Pendleton would do the same thing. Because just as the other speaker had mentioned, the schools on base can only be attended by military live on that base. So you are already coming down to a much smaller number. While I think all children should return back to school, again, I'm speaking in regards to the military lifestyle that I do lead. Also to mention, the virtual learning does not work, and there is nothing in that plan that supports military families, whether it be dual active duty, single active duty, or active duty with a working spouse. I myself am going to be working full time, and my husband is a Marine. We would not be able to get on and meet with a teacher at this time and then go on and meet for peer group work at this time. I will be working from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. So then my daughter is supposed to cram an entire day's worth of school in the evening hours after I feed her dinner, and she's already exhausted. These military children are going to suffer from that, because again, military families are constantly moving. While if you're stationed at Camp Lejeune, maybe you'd be able to have a lifestyle where you have one parent that stays at home and doesn't work. But if you're living in California, military families cannot accommodate having one parent stay at home, because the cost of living in California is so much money. We need to send our kids back to school, and I think that it should have been given the option to parents as if they wanted to send their child back or if they wanted to continue with virtual learning like the other bases have adopted. We are coming from Camp Lejeune. And at Camp Lejeune, if we would have been staying there, I would have had the option to send my daughter back from full-time learning. And I really, really wish that Oceanside Unified School District would have listened to all of the parents that are asking to please reopen the schools. Because if my daughter can go to a daycare, then she can go to school all day. Thank you.
Next speaker is Kristen Matella. She's in the room now. Kristen, go ahead. Kristen Matella, you'll need to unmute so you can address the board.
Okay, terrific. Good evening, folks. My name is Kristen Matella, and I'm the mother of Madison and Mitchell Matella, both of whom are rising seniors at Oceanside High School. While I appreciate the work that this board has done, I would urge you to seriously contemplate and consider whom you are advocates for. Adults have no trouble using their voices, certainly not coalitions of adults in the form of teacher unions. I would challenge you all to embrace your role's duty, and that ought to be to serve as champions for the students of Oceanside. This means putting our kids and their needs and best interests first, above all else. I have not heard much concern regarding the threats and risks that the children of Oceanside face while left at home to fend for themselves for yet another semester. The truth is, many will serve as daycare or teachers for younger siblings. Some will face abuse. Numerous will drop out, while others will fall victim to alcoholism and drug use. Did you know that every 30 seconds a child is solicited online for sexual exploitation? The current state of virtual learning situates children in a vulnerable position beyond all imagination. We are handing them iPads, phones, and laptops and expecting them to advance their own education. Meanwhile, what are we doing to protect their health? The World Health Organization defines health as a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being, and not merely the absence of disease or infirmity. I assert that our leaders are failing to consider all aspects of our children's well-being and are being hyper-obsessed with a virus that has little, if any, impact on you. You are not only robbing students of a real education, but stripping away the fabric of society by removing all social interaction, sports, music, art, and club involvement. Many of these activities are precisely what encourages kids out of bed in the morning and motivates them to attend class and to perform to a certain standard. Without extracurriculars, sadly, many high schoolers will lack the desire to continue their education and may become a statistic that our administrators don't wish to track. Frankly, the precedent we are setting right now would suggest that we should never have in-person instruction again, as the seasonal flu is significantly more fatal for our children. Educators, be warned. In your nearsightedness, you are inadvertently advocating for your own extinction while simultaneously destroying the future one student at a time. What we are facing right now in schools is the most real existential crisis of all time, and the direction that we go will carve a path for society's ultimate success or demise. What will you choose, board? Thank you.
Next speaker is CC Happy. Happy. Stand by just a minute. There's not a person in the room with that name. Give me one moment to check phone numbers. Either the name or the numbers in the room. So the next speaker will be Rhonda J. Oliver.
Rhonda Halter.
Oliver.
Oliver. Rhonda Oliver.
She's being promoted now.
Good evening. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go ahead, Rhonda.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to be able to speak with all of you this evening. I wanted to share my experience thus far with the distance learning. I am a foster and adoptive parent to five children that all attend Oceanside Unified School District. Four of my children have IEPs. One was in the process of being assessed for an IEP prior to the COVID closure. Distance learning does not work and will not work for my children. I am in the process of drafting emails to each of my children's case managers, administrators, the director of special education, and the superintendent requesting IEP meetings prior to the August 17th date to address what is this district going to do for my children. We are currently engaged in extended school year. It has not been any different than what the distance learning was in the beginning of when COVID started through the spring and into the summer. The idea that my children, who have a myriad of issues and diagnoses, can sit in front of a computer for the hours that you're suggesting would not only go against what the American Pediatric Association says, it would also go against my belief system and what I truly, truly think is placing my children at risk. I am really, really dissatisfied after the last board meeting when there was not a focus on return to school. And I continue to be kind of at a loss as to what we're going to do for special education students. I've posed several questions the last couple of weeks with regards to distance learning, and I have not yet got an answer. I actually reached out to an attorney today, an education attorney, to try to get some answers. One question would be, what is going to happen if we choose not to do distance learning? Are we going to be held with the Student Attendance Review Board? How is that going to be handled? My second question is, would we be allowed to request a gap year for our students? Again, I am unable, unwilling to do distance learning with my five children, and the school district is going to need to come up with a different plan with FAPE, because it is not going to work and it doesn't seem to be a focus of what we're going to do for special education. And that's that's right now my focus is what am I going to do to make this a successful school year for my children. However, I'm being told by my advocate and the attorney that it's not what I'm going to do, it's what is the district going to do. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Rhonda. You raised some great issues. Appreciate the concern you have. Next speaker.
Next speaker is Joey Bertocchini. He's being promoted right now. Joey, go ahead.
Just give me a thumbs up. You can hear me. That'd be great.
We can hear you.
All right. Thanks so much. Good evening, President, Blessing, and Board. If there's one thing I would like each of you to take away from this meeting, it would be this. I would like to share with you the most staggering COVID-19 statistic that I've seen since the pandemic began. And this is, just lost my notes here. All that buildup. This statistic is directly from the California Department of Public Health. Within the state of California, since the pandemic began, the number of deaths for children under the age of 17 is zero. There has literally not been one child that has died from coronavirus in the state of California. None. I'm a parent of two children, ages 6 and 9, and there's nothing in my life more important than the health and well-being of my kids. Given this statistic I just mentioned, I am in favor of a full return to classroom scheduling for our children, specifically under the age of 17, for those families who feel comfortable sending their kids to school. Just as a bit of an antidote, I'd like to explain the financial ramifications on our family, who we believe are very much an average family living in Oceanside. And please keep in mind the statistic that, again, not one child has died in California from coronavirus since the pandemic began. Living in a household where both my wife and I work, the cost for us to send our kids to Palmquist Elementary with the additional time for base is $220 per month and $230 per month, respectively, for our two children, a total cost of $450 per month for our family. If our kids are forced to stay at home again this year, this is what we are faced with financially. The cost of child care and babysitters for our family translates to $180 per day, and in a given month of roughly 22 school days, that means we would need to come up with $3,960 per month so that we can go to work each day. I don't know about others, but our combined net salary after state and federal taxes is not enough to cover that type of cost. What about the damage we are doing to our children socially? It is well known now that this community and the amount of screen time for our children has skyrocketed as we try to do our best as parents to work, cook, clean, teach, and keep some semblance of sanity. We can either pay $3,960 to a babysitter or hand our children an iPad, Kindle, or television remote control for free. The choice, unfortunately, is an easy one for those of us that are just trying to get through the day. Additionally, the American Psychological Association's 2019 report showed spiking mental health disorders in young Americans, including depression, anxiety, and suicidal thoughts. Experts are pointing towards countless hours spent on social media and other technology-based devices that have moved friendships from backyards to apps. There is no doubt that we are looking towards an even larger increase in those disorders if we keep our kids out of school. Thank you for listening to my comments. I think it's important for you to understand that we may not be looking to you to actually make these changes, but to be advocates for us, to go to the state leaders and decision makers to make the changes we need in order to give our children the best possible outcome. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Joy. Appreciate it. Next speaker, Greg. Is this the last one? We had 12.
Yeah, this is the last one for this. Last speaker is Lily Sanchez. She's being promoted right now. Lily, you're all set to go ahead.
Hi, I'm Lily Sanchez. I am representing the Human Rights Council of Oceanside, and I'm also a parent of three kids in the Oceanside Unified School District. And I want to begin by just mentioning HRCO has brought up the fact that limiting the number of speakers during a school board meeting is not legal or ethical. And of course, y'all should be open to hearing as much as possible from parents, community, and other students. And having the 15-minute limit where the meeting starts is actually limiting people from being able to join the public comments. So I just wanted to point that out to you. Some people aren't able to join the meeting at 6 o'clock or even like the 15 minutes before to sign up for whatever reason. And also sometimes people aren't sure if they're going to make the meeting, so they may not want to sign up the day before or what have you, and do have to wait to see if they can make it. So just please keep that in mind, unless you want to hear from the ACLU again. Now, what I'm speaking to here is about the importance of taking precaution with the health and safety of our children and our community. And also for transparency, it's really difficult to understand what it is that the district is planning to do when. I sat through your presentation and I saw, you know, the things about the water stations, which was very important to you all, the hand sanitizers and opening up the daycares. But when is this going to happen? What is going to be the trigger? Are you only waiting for the governor to say, okay, San Diego is off the list, and then off you're going to run with all this? You know, like, that's really difficult for us to really understand, like, what is the plan? And I really hope that you're not just waiting for the governor or somebody else to make these decisions for you. As a school board, y'all really need to have this planned out like other districts have. You know, like, when we're gonna do what, not just sit and wait until let's see what the government tells us, right? Like, that's really what I wanna see from our district. I also want to point out that we are totally in support of teachers and unions and their right to a safe and healthy workplace. It is important. I know everybody's saying children don't get sick, children don't die. However, they do. They have. Just because it hasn't happened here or you haven't seen it with your own eyes does not mean that it has not happened. And it's also like, why isn't anybody thinking of what the students are going to see, what your child is going to see? What if your child's teacher ends up dying from COVID? Is that really okay with you to have children experience this because you really want to get out there? Yes, distance learning sucked. That's why we want this to be very well planned, much earlier than a month before school starts, but here we are. But the better you can plan this, the better the education is going to be, the safer everyone is going to be, including the entire community, not just the kids that you happen to be sending in. We have the entire community to think of here. And I know I ran out of time. There's so much other things that I wanted to say, but again, I had to spend some time on the limit things. I know there's other people that are wanting to speak on the issue of the renaming, so hopefully they made it in. If not, we'll be sending an email and letting you all know everything else. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lily. We appreciate the comments. We'll take them on board. All right. No more public speakers on that item, Greg.
That's all for this.
Okay. I'll bring it back to the board for any further discussion or direction you want to give to staff. We appreciate the presentation. You may appreciate the questions. It looks like we may have some lawsuits out there that may on the governor on some of this stuff.
I have some questions, and maybe for some clarity, yeah, about the childcare, because, and I do listen to the parents. I, like many board members here, I do have a child in school, and so I'm very concerned about what does childcare look like. And it, maybe we can talk about, it's not just watching kids and shoving them all into a room, but it's actually more well thought out than that.
You want? I think Steph, we had a nuance there too that we should point out, that in the last minute revision to their PowerPoint on the, there's a qualifier there, if I look at that right, Julie, that we, if we can provide childcare on site is a There's an if for that.
There is, and Dr. Sparks will speak to it. We literally just received information at 5 o'clock tonight. There are parameters around childcare that we're able to offer, and there are regulations. So Dr. Sparks, are you able to share any clarification payment tonight at 5 o'clock?
Yes, thank you. So we have ACEs funding through our grants that covers before and after school child care or programming. Programming. And that funding continues as grants. The grants continue to support before and after school programming that will be, at least beginning in the year, a virtual model for students at the year last year from March until June. And so those opportunities will still be available for students and families who participate in childcare through a virtual model. And as some programs have staff and space available to do so, considering social distancing and the health and safety orders that they would have to abide by if they had students actually in spaces in person, they can provide that childcare as well in a before and after school. The guidance has changed as of today is that the ACE thing that supplies the grant for before and after school programming does not cover the during the day child care that would be needed. And so we do have program providers and partners who are willing to provide those types of child care needs and services. We're currently looking into what the funding sources will look like and whether or not we get flexibility or waivers to use ACEs funding in a different way. So really what we're looking at is, we have providers that have the capacity, the staff and the space to provide childcare before school and after school, which are funded by the grant. And then during normal school hours, they can also do this. They have the capacity and staff to do, but we're looking at funding sources because those are currently unknown given the guidance that was released today. There is more guidance coming out this week from the county, which our team will be participating in and gathering more information that we'll report back to the board at that time.
So we will still currently take signups that you can fill that out. The information's on our website. It's under news items, so it's readily available now. We need to get a sense of what we're looking at as far as scope, how many people need childcare for their children. We're offering it for K-5. Essential workers are the priority, and then we'll go from there. And we are looking at various funding sources, the CARES money, which have not yet received, general fund and other dollars, because we know that this is a priority. So literally we're getting information by the minute. We are regulated by the government, and so we do take those orders seriously. We need to adhere to those. So staff will be continuing to go through those and updating our families. But please, if you're interested and you have a need for that child care, please go to our website and complete that information so that we can start preparing.
Great.
Before we get into any more details, can I make a quick... So I want to thank our staff and leadership. We have been juggling ongoing updates and information and ongoing changes to the situation about what we can provide and what kids can receive and what teachers can do, what PPE looks like. I mean, you name it, it changed over and over and over again. And I wanted to know what my kindergartner was going to do in April. I wanted to know what it's going to look like as soon as this all started. But we knew that we wanted to communicate deliberately with the information that was going to be relevant at the time. So I want to thank staff for having the patience to work through each problem as it came and to not get the hopes up of our families. The choice was made to offer what we knew we could offer and not offer something that was out of our control. So I appreciate that. And while we've heard all kinds of things from all over the region, we've been committed to making sure that we're communicating honestly and with the best integrity that we can. So I want to appreciate staff for their work in that space, because communication is something that we focused on. And and y'all have done a solid job. So thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Well said. I echo that same sentiment. It's been a challenge for staff and for all of us and our families to deal with how this is going to roll out, and information is changing, as has been indicated up until the moment, and it will continue to do that. Pay attention, stay attuned, and staff will keep you informed. They're not keeping you informed enough. Get a hold of the staff here, we'll get back to you, you know, with something, with what we can. It's going to take a lot of common sense. It's going to take a lot of understanding and a lot of patience by everybody to work. We're going to be back in school with our kids before we know it, which is where we all want to be. Any other discussion or questions for staff? There's no action that's needed at this point. Eleanor, yes.
I'm still not clear in terms of the elementary school day. Exactly how many hours are we talking about? I know you said some schools start late, some schools will start earlier, but how many actual hours will students be in attendance at school? Do we know that?
We are not, Vicki Gravlin, you can come in after me. We're not being deliberately evasive on answering this question, so I apologize if it appears as though we are. But what the guidance states is that there will be daily live instruction. We want to, through this entire process, be very collaborative with all of our staff and with our teachers specifically. I don't know who's there's an echo, but... with our staff, and so we've given you a sample elementary schedule, but that's just a sample, right? We understand that kinder has different needs from fifth grade, and so we want to collaborate with our administrators, with our teachers, to ensure that we provide the best possible schedule for each grade level. So we just gave you a general idea. So that will be communicated out by school sites as soon as that information has been decided, but it hasn't been decided. And again, we're not trying to be deliberately evasive, deliberately unclear, and I appreciate what you said, Board Member Joyce, is we're trying to be very honest and not make false promises and meet the needs of people. And we understand that we heard very clearly tonight that we are not able to meet the needs of all people with the current guidance, but we are going to strive to do a very solid job for all of our community and all of our students. We are working on a child care plan that like the gentleman that shared his need, his financial situation. That is probably a very common financial situation, and we are very in tune with that. And we'll do the best to the extent possible and to the extent that the guidelines allow to provide those services. So now that we know we're going into a virtual learning model, at least we know that that's where we're going and that's where the guidance is. So we can put our full force into planning for that and meeting needs of people. So again, I apologize that I'm not giving you a very clear answer on that. It's because we don't have that answer yet. We just got this guidance on Friday and needed to adapt and try to present people with as much information as we had. But that will be communicated to families as soon as we have.
I think communication is extremely important at this time. All of us have family members that are definitely going to be affected by what's going on with the schools, and for me, especially at the elementary level. So I greatly appreciate what you're saying. I greatly would pump up on the due diligence that they're doing. So thank you.
My only direction would be that we start looking at our students that are most vulnerable. So when we start looking at our students with special needs, we've heard from several of the families, you know, and our primary students that really struggle with, you know, some distance learning, that we start looking at what we're going to do to support them. and be as creative as we can within the mandates that the governor gave us to provide support for families. I also look at, you know, I have to communicate with my employer that my student's going to be home, and I have to ask flexibility from them to be able to be at home with my child sometimes, as well as support them. So what can the district do to support our families with communicating to their employers? You know, we're in this together. So, and no one wanted them. It's extremely inconvenient. But, you know, hopefully we get off that monitoring list sooner rather than later, and we can transition back into in-person instruction.
Here, here.
Here, here.
Here,
here. So, yeah. I want to just first off, piggyback on the most vulnerable, especially special ed. We heard from several parents tonight, as a special educator, as just a general advocate for students, as we all here have talked about over and over and over again. We know that this distance learning affects kids differently. We know that there are going to be gaps in some students' access. And so anything that we need to do to fill in those gaps is something that I want to hear more about. I'm a little concerned about okaying the plans, because I don't know exactly what the expectations will be. So I'm all behind okaying a return to virtual to start the year, because I think that's a given under the current situation. But I would like to know some of the expectations of how long kids will be asynchronous, and those types of nuances that frankly they have a lot to do with how successful our plan going back is. Staff, I know, has been working on this. I know that, and I know that it's going to come out from the school sites, but I think district-wide, we should have a conversation as well about the expectations and what that's going to look like, because this is it. This is our school. School is not a building to start the year. School is the communication and the community that they come together learns. So I don't know if we can amend the solution. I don't know how to get there, but I don't feel like we exactly got a full plan yet. And I realize that's the situation. The fact that we had our Tuesday board meeting the 3 working days after the governor decided to change the game. But we still have some time before school starts. So I would like to hear more about it.
I think for me, I know for as a parent, the difficult part is the unknowns. And so there's many unknowns, and there's parents out there that have the unknowns, and we are looking at students that don't do well virtually. And we don't have that laid out here, because again, and it's not on the staff, it's not on anybody, because if we just all go to everybody on Friday and we're trying to make it happen. And like Mr. Joyce, I agree that if we can amend this somehow to where we go back and get, I know the virtual is what we have, and but there, I'd like to know the triggers of what it is of how we change and what the triggers are, so that we can get to the next level. And I know we're going to get there, and I know it's kind of hard to kind of put all that together this week, and it's such a short notice, because it is, again, very short notice, and trying to put all this together, and in no way is this an attack to anybody, but I'd like to know, as a parent, as a board member, as somebody that's out in the community, how we voice that to our community and to our stakeholders, what we're doing that's going to best support our students and our families out. We talked about giving training to our families. What did that look like? I think there's more in depth that we need to go into that, of what does that really mean, and how we communicate that, because there are families right now that we can honestly say that they don't even know what's going on at this point, and they won't know until we come back to school, because they don't get on the internet, they don't look at their emails, they don't get phone calls, they don't check those things. So how do we communicate to those families the best way that we possibly can to know what their needs are for themselves and the children, because there is that gap in them knowing and understanding, and that's just being out in the community itself, just listening to what the struggles are. So if there's a way that we can ensure our families and even myself as a board member that we're going to be able to communicate that to them and get that out to them, as we know, they will know that and the communication part of it. I'm huge on that. It was things we lacked originally, and we're doing so much better on that. And I thank everybody for that, because this right here, just putting this together, was amazing. But there's still so much more that we need to do. And our families, please know that we are trying to do everything and anything that we possibly can. And it falls on our staff, and they're working nonstop on all this. So they're doing an amazing job of trying to get the questions that we ask, because we are constantly asking questions too. As parents, board members, we're constantly asking questions things that are coming in our life as parents within our district. So I don't know how we can change this or amend this, like Eric said, to be able to get this going and better communicate to our families so they understand too.
So I think that what you're asking, so we would appreciate and we recommend approval of our plan to let people know that we are opening up in a virtual world. We do have sample schedules that we provided you. You can absolutely bring back details on the parent education that we're planning, the professional learning that we're providing for our educators. We can bring back details. Right now, what we're asking you to approve is for people to know that they're going back. Virtual learning, staff know that our schools will be open for them to use. It would be helpful for us to,
as we start virtual, and the reason that our schools are going to be open, we are allowed to have them open for staff at this time, using social distancing and everything that we discussed.
And also, if we are able to provide childcare at our various sites, we want to get in a habit of what that means for people to operate in those spaces under the guidelines and regulations. So really, what you're approving, we're starting school with virtual learning. And all the details that you're asking for, we can absolutely bring back. I don't think that approval of our opening plan is contingent upon those details. Nor do I think that those details are necessary to approve the virtual learning plan. Certainly your choice is to delay the public understanding that they're opening up in virtual, but I will say to you that we will bring back all of these details that you asked, as we are diligently working on all of that information. We will bring you more details on what you could possibly even ever want.
All right.
All of these things that you mentioned staff is working on.
I did want to say that the plan was put together by 180 plus employees. And so I think I have faith that our teachers and our classified and our leadership in our district put together a well thought out, robust digital learning plan, and it will continue to improve. I just know everybody has shell shock from the crisis learning that we did when we closed schools and everybody had to start online. This is well thought out and intentional, and we can work through all those details as the plans change. But at this point, the governor has made a mandate. We are doing it. So, you know, moving forward with the plan so we can prepare the parents, the students, and our staff, I think is critical for us.
So
I hear that as a motion.
Well, I'd like to make a motion to amend the current action to approve the start of virtual learning resuming on August 17th. But I would like to say that I would like to not call it a full plan, because we have sample schedules and we have lots of details. I mean, honestly, most of it, there's a lot of good information in here, but this is not, to me, a full virtual plan. I know there's been a lot of work that's not listed on this, but that would be my motion to amend the...
So a motion to open up virtually on August 17th. That's the motion. Yes. That's fine. All right, I got a motion. Do I have a second?
I'll get a second.
I got a second from Member Begin. Any further discussion? I think that's an elegant solution, Eric, and I think staff fully understands where we're coming from. We all love and appreciate the work that went into this, and we just need to respond at this point in time and say, this is where we're going August 17th, folks. Stay tuned, and we're going to open up the fire hose to get you a lot of information. All right. I'll call for the in favor. Please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
Aye. Really want to think about this a little bit more, so I'm going to abstain.
All right. The motion carries 4-0 with one abstention and Member Evans abstaining. All right.
So now we would need to vote on the actual one, or is that we're good?
No, that's it. That's the action. We're opening virtual August 17th, and stay tuned. Right.